It's time for everybody's favorite part of any Winning Agenda episode, the plugs. Just going to talk briefly about a couple of things. First of all, our good friend Jacob Morris over at the Android Netrunner Unofficial Rules Wiki, Anker, Project Anker on Twitter, will now be featuring FAQ updates in time with each new data pack release. This is something that we're so super psyched about. We've been talking about it for a long time. The community's needed it for a long time. So Jacob will be liaising with Lucas and the design team prior to the release of packs, and we'll have the FAQ up on Anker ready to go in time with the release. This is so great. Please, if you're not already, follow the Android Netrunner comprehensive unofficial rules on Twitter. Get involved with the discussion on Reddit. Really support Jacob. He puts a lot of time and effort, his lot of his free time and effort into this just to make the community a better place, and we can't get behind it more. So please support him. We think he's great. Secondly, before we get into our episode with V. Herman, we just want to give another shout out to anybody who is interested in coming on and talking about diversity in Netrunner or even in gaming communities in general. We have a very large platform here at The Winning Agenda to raise awareness for diversity, and it would be a serious crime for us not to give as many people who we can a voice to talk about things that either they think that people can do to improve the gaming community, share their experiences, and highlight some of the fantastic things about this community. So please, if you're a woman, if you're a member of the LGBTQ+, anything like that, please get in contact with us. Shoot us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have you on. Thanks so much, guys. That's all I've got to say this week, so get stuck into this week's episode of TWA. Thank you so much. Good evening, and welcome to episode 49 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include 2015 regional champion and 2015 Australian Nationals top 8 competitor Wilfie Horrig.
Hey, what's up?
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Hello.
Runner-up for the 2015 Florida Regionals, V. Herman.
Howdy.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. So we've got V as our special guest tonight. How are you, V? All the way over there in Florida. Thank you for getting up so early to be with us.
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for staying up late.
No, it's not too late here, but we're dealing with it, so...
Now, we understand, V, that we're over here in Melbourne, Australia, and
right.
You grew up in Melbourne.
Yeah,
Florida.
Totally, in Melbourne, Florida. Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic coincidence. We can be Melburnians together.
Oh, great. But I don't know if I'd brag about being from Melbourne, Florida.
Well, not when compared to Melbourne, Australia, obviously.
The world's most livable city.
The world's most livable city, yeah.
We don't want to get too many angry emails from people not in Melbourne.
Yeah, no, we don't.
But it actually is rated the world's... Anyway. We'll leave it there.
So V, tell us a bit about yourself. When did you get into the Netrunner phenomenon?
I've been playing Netrunner for about, I guess, 2 years. I got into it about when Creation and Control first came out. I kind of just played it a bit casually then, but maybe only in the last 6, 7, 8 months have I really gotten kind of competitive about it.
And what was your background before that? Were you into a lot of, like, sort of the geekier level games? Like, did you ever play Magic or Pokemon or anything like that?
When I was a kid, I collected Pokemon, but I just kind of liked having the Pokemon cards in my binder. When I was maybe a little older, I played Yu-Gi-Oh! A little bit, but never really competitively.
And you went from there into the sort of LCG Netrunner scene?
Yeah, there's quite a big gap, but...
There is?
Yeah, I haven't played Magic at all.
So what was it about Netrunner that got you hooked?
Well, I played kind of before that. I was mostly playing board games and stuff, and, you know, LCGs are kind of marketed as... to the same crowd as board games are a lot of the time. I first came about it after reading a review from Shut Up and Sit Down, who seemed to really like it, and I trusted their opinions.
And so you just bought a core set and gave it a go with some friends, or how did you first get into the game?
Yeah, pretty much that. I got a core set, played it with my friend, and then kind of found a local meetup around me to start going to.
And what decks did you play when you first cracked the core set? What did you enjoy about the game?
And the core set, I think I was just like, oh, I just want to try everything. But maybe like once I got a few data packs, the first deck I was really into was a Chaos Theory deck with Personal Workshop and 3 Stim Hack.
Oh yeah, that was around for a little while. It was kind of like, mm-hmm. like a tier 2.0 deck or something like that.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun for me.
So when did you make the full leap from casual into competitive play?
I think like kind of slowly, like at our game night tournaments, I would do better and better. Eventually like just consistently getting second or third, but when we actually had our store championships, we had way more people than we ever had, but I still ended up actually won that, And then I was invited to the STEM Hack Invitational. Normally, like, I would feel like, oh, that's way too competitive for me. I just do, you know, game night kits and stuff. But I was, you know, kind of in a small pool that was actually allowed to participate in it at being a store champion. So I decided to give it a shot. And kind of from there, I've just really started enjoying the more competitive side of the game.
So, V, for those of our listeners who don't know, the STEM Hack Store Champion Invitational, what was it?
Dan D'Argio and the rest of STEM Hack kind of organized a tournament where it would be all on Octagon, and it would be for, you know, everyone worldwide who had won a store championship. So it basically just kind of like a limited pool of people that had already won a store championship all competing together.
I know I ask everybody this, but how do you find the Octagon interface? Did it take you a while to learn?
It definitely took me a while to learn, but now I have, you know, kind of like maybe 500 games on there or so. So I've just, it's like second nature to me now, and it's so much quick. It's very quick to me. I tried Jinteki recently, but it's just so encumbersome, but it might be a little easier for new players.
And so from the Store Championship Invitational, you then went on to play at Regionals with your buy that you won from the Store Champs?
Yeah, that's correct.
So tell us a bit about that, because that was the one you came second in. So how did you choose your decks, and how did you go about preparing for it?
Kind of like before then, I had just really fallen in love with the prepaid voice pad Kate McCaffrey deck. Just really clicked with me. Like, it was just, and it's just such a good feeling to like play a lucky find and get 9 credits for 2 clicks. The other deck I chose was Replicating Perfection, which I've kind of been playing on and off since I've started playing in tournaments in general. Like, after Caprice Nisei came out, I decided to try it, say, hey, maybe that's be pretty good in Replicating Perfection. And then, of course, you know, Dan D'Argio has really popularized it as a tier 1 deck. And it's just a deck I'm very comfortable with.
And were they the same decks that you played at the Store Champs?
Not at all, actually. The Kate deck is the same deck, but my Corp deck at the Store Championship was a NEH deck with Midseason, Psychographic, and Celebrity Gif. But once Clot came out, I knew that deck probably wouldn't perform as well, not being able to pull off like a Psychographics, really.
So you switched over to Replicating Perfection, and that worked out pretty well for you?
On the day, they performed super well. I mean, I finished the Swiss round going 5-3, and then, you know, obviously I made it all the way to the very last game. I even took one game off of Pacer before he won the other one and won the whole tournament.
That's not the guy that came second at Nationals, is it?
I think it is.
It is, actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'll rephrase the question like I'm omniscient then. Hold on. So you lost the finals of your regional to the eventual runner-up of the US Nationals.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, okay. So quite a bit of competition there that day. So we talk a bit about preparation and also goals. So when you went into the regional, did you have a goal for yourself? Did you see yourself trying to make the top 8 or even take home the event?
I try to keep my goals kind of low so I don't disappoint myself. And
yeah, no, the best thing about being a pessimist is that you're only ever delighted, am I right?
Yeah, totally.
That's great.
I like only pleasant surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did kind of maybe in the back of my head, though, really just kind of want to make the top 8. But then I was thrilled that I actually made it, and then I just forgot to lose in the elimination until the very final game, I guess.
That's the way to do it.
That's exactly the way to do it.
Yeah. And V, you wrote a tournament report on that specific event, didn't you?
Yeah, it's actually on STEM Hack.
Have you been playing much since then? Is there anything, did you go to Nats or anything else you want to chat about with your...
Actually, I did end up getting a Nationals bye because, you know, Pacer had already had one from a previous Regionals.
Oh, okay.
But unfortunately, I wasn't really able to afford to go to the Nationals and take off work and buy a hotel and everything.
Damn. Have you been sort of playing much since then? Any interesting decks you've been trying recently?
Yeah, I was lucky enough, though, to have a friend who did go to Gen Con and picked me up the Data and Destiny and Universe of Tomorrow cards, so I've been playing with those a lot.
Fantastic. Has it been good to have those a little bit early and have some new toys to play around with?
Yeah, definitely. Though they are on Octagon now, so kind of everyone, you know, has some ability to play with them. I'm kind of trying everything. I'm trying Sunny and Fisk on the runner side. I'm trying HB, but using Global Food Initiative, like kind of a different agenda suite. Trying Sync Out and Chronos Protocol. I'm having a lot of fun with that one.
So what have you been having the most success with so far?
I'd say probably the most successful of the list has been Sunny and HB.
Hmm. And what have you got in your Sunny list at the moment?
I play 3 career fair, 3 modded, 3 quality time, and just kind of try to set up super quick. I am playing her security nexus, and then like 3 access the global sec to boost her link.
Yeah.
I also have 3 multi-threader, and I just kind of try to get set up super quick and just lock the game down with a bunch of drip, and then basically accessing servers for super cheaply.
And what are the breakers that you're playing?
I'm playing all of hers, the Sherman, the Shrike, the Striker, 2 copies of each.
They're affordable with all the economy?
Most of the time I can modded them in.
Oh, I meant more for paying for their...
You're right, but the 3 multi-threader really helped me. You know, if I get in for like a 4 or 6 discount, then it's not so bad. And then security chip, if I want to go through a lot of ice at once, can really make them a lot cheaper. Then it's just like 2 per ice, really. Basically, yeah, it's like if they stack R&D or something, once I get like 2 or 3 R&D interface, then I can just still go in and get a really quick run if I want to keep locking them for really cheap. And maybe I'll skip one of the ice with Security Nexus.
Yeah, that does seem to be the way to go with Sunny, to try and build very slowly and take advantage of Security Nexus giving you basically an unbeatable late game.
Right, yeah, it's really nice to just be like, I don't feel like dealing with that toll booth.
Did you say that you play any drip economy sort of underworld contact stuff going on there?
Right, yeah, yeah, I do. I have 3 underworld and 3 data folding because, you know, her breakers actually don't take up any memory.
Yeah.
She starts with 2 links, so... between the Security Nexus and the 3 multi-threaders, I still have 2 memory left over to feed my data folding.
Mm-hmm. And what other programs do you play to take up that space?
Just the multi-threaders and the breakers, actually, as far as programs.
Right, so you never have to worry about accidentally disabling your foldings, right?
Exactly. The only thing is if I install 3 multi-threaders before I install my console, but... that rarely comes up.
Fantastic. Oh, it sounds very interesting. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be keen to try out their own Data and Destiny lists and looking forward to all of your feedback in the book and Reddit threads as to how you're all going. Please let us know.
We'll be more excited when we get it in person as well here, which should be sometime in 2019.
Probably early 2019, though.
Probably quarter 2019, one. Yeah. Now, V, you got in contact with us after the episode with... our special guest, Abby, who came on to talk about women in Netrunner specifically. And we had a bit of a shout out at the end of the episode to anybody who's basically not a white male who would maybe want to come on and share their experiences about diversity in Netrunner and things like that.
What have you found to be some of the challenges that you've faced in terms of diversity in the Netrunner community? I guess we'll start off with that and then we'll talk about some of the good things next. But yeah, what have been sort of some of the difficulties that you've faced or some of the things that you've found a little bit harder being somebody who's not, doesn't conform to the sort of white male dominant stereotype of gamers?
I'm identify as transgender and specifically bigender. Kind of when I first came out, I had a lot of difficulties with the people I'd already played Netrunner with before I came out, getting kind of names and pronouns correct. That's definitely, and that's still even a struggle now, because it's, you don't really, you meet someone, you play a card game with them, but you don't really, you know, you don't want to sit them down and explain pronouns or identity or anything to them, really.
Absolutely. Do you think that sort of maybe feeds into sort of a challenge of its own, which isn't necessarily even always about the way that people react to you, in that, you know, you might not get a negative reaction from somebody, but the fact that you're having these, I guess what you're saying, these short interactions with people where you're there for a particular purpose, which is to play a card game, you don't necessarily have the capacity to engage in a deeper philosophical discussion about how you speak to each other. So I guess for our listeners' benefit, what might be some of what have been some of the ways that people have interacted with you, people who might not have been as familiar with people who are, is bigender? Is that the term that you'd use? Or?
That's the used term I use, but I think maybe your question is like more towards the trans community.
Sure, yeah. Perhaps. So if somebody who's not so familiar with people from the trans community or hasn't really interacted with people from the trans community before, what advice would you give them about some of the ways that they could make it a more pleasant experience for both them and the person that they're playing with?
I think maybe like people could put assumptions aside, maybe if they ever see someone and they're not sure what kind of pronouns they would prefer, like, it's maybe just using they and them, which is generally, you know, pretty safe to use. Or, and then if you have a chance, maybe you could just ask them. It doesn't have to be like a big deal. Just be like, hey, do you have any pronouns you prefer?
Since you've come out and more people are aware that you are bigender or transgender, how have you found the reaction from players, and have you felt as though you're still welcomed into the community?
I think maybe like within my own group, still not a lot of them are possibly aware that I'm trans. They might not have been in the group while I was transitioning. I still sometimes get mispronounced, and it's just like, it's really hard to correct that sort of thing, because usually if you pronoun someone, you're talking to someone else. Oh, you know, you might say, oh, he played Scorched Earth or something, but you know, you're not the one being addressed, so it's hard to correct it.
Yeah, I think that's something that can be a little insidious, and people should watch out for it even when they're not strictly being cognizant of it. Like, it's something that you have to consider at all times. Not necessarily.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's great. What have been some of your observations about diversity in the Netrunner community generally? Have you come across many other people from the trans community or the queer community generally who are involved in the Netrunner community?
I have yet to meet anyone else who is of the LGBTQ plus community so far that plays Netrunner. I don't know if I've even met someone who is a woman who plays Netrunner in my community yet.
Okay. So is that something that you'd sort of like to see more of? And obviously we don't want people to feel any pressure to come out in Netrunner communities. There may well be people who are LGBTQ plus but haven't come out. But, you know, if it is the case that there isn't anyone else in your community who identifies that way, is that something that you'd like to see change, that people felt more comfortable both joining the community in the first place and playing Netrunner, but also being out within those spaces?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that might be like a thing in kind of, you know, nerdier culture in general. It's just like, you know, we're all kind of outcasts in a way. So it'd be nice to, for, you know, Netrunner maybe specifically, or other card games, to be like kind of like a haven for people to just, you know, be able to be themselves.
Yeah, and I think that was something that we raised with Abby when we were interviewing her, was the idea that sort of gaming communities tend to be places that people can go to have a release and an outlet and a way to have fun, where they might be excluded from some other traditional social ways of doing that. And that the community historically has been quite welcoming of people with varying degrees of ability in terms of, you know, social abilities and various other personality traits. Do you think that there has been a particular difficulty for people from within the queer community or the LGBTQ community becoming part of gaming communities?
I could definitely see it. I've not personally seen it in Netrunner, of course, but, you know, like, it's kind of a... It's a tough thing already, kind of, you know, to walk into a game store and approach some people playing a card game and trying to, you know, introduce yourself and ask if you can play with them. But just, like, also maybe the difficulty of looking at those people and, you know, you see people that may or may not be like you, and just being uncomfortable in that sort of space.
Do you think there's anything that the communities can do to be more welcoming to, you know, the LGBTQ plus, or even just women in general as well?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if anyone does.
It doesn't have to be definitive. Doesn't have to be a definitive answer. But just any thoughts you might have, like the maybe changes that you may have wanted to implement, or things that maybe made you uncomfortable and thought, well, if that wasn't there, there could be some, you know, more people like me.
Or even if there are little things that people have done that you found to be particularly helpful.
I don't know if I've encountered anything that I specifically made me feel welcome, but I think maybe like a nice exercise people could do is just kind of think about kind of like what it's like to be, you know, what's required to kind of get to the point of joining the community, you know, going to a game store of, you know, searching everyone to find specifically maybe the Netrunner players, and then kind of being brave enough to be like, hey, I see y'all are playing Netrunner. I'd like to play too, or whatever. Maybe like kind of examining all the steps there and maybe making it a little easier, Some people have talked about having maybe more beginner tournaments outside of a game store. I think that's that might be a good way to start.
I think you've touched on something really wonderful there, V, in terms of people putting themselves in the shoes of somebody looking to join the community, because as players, there are multiple things that can mean that we might come off the wrong way to someone new. It might be that we're really intensely focusing on a game and we just don't give somebody the right body language or the right tone of voice, and it makes them feel a bit excluded when they do take that really brave first step and come forward and approach us. Or it might be genuinely that we're scared of having new players join our community because we're, you know, the big fish in the small pond and we don't want anybody interrupting that. You know, all of those things can sort of come into the mix and cause somebody new who's joining the community, whoever they are, to feel a little bit negative in their first experience.
And hopefully it's not the latter.
Yeah, hopefully it's not the latter most of the time.
Hopefully most people want the community to grow.
Exactly. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's hard enough for anyone to take that step and walk up to a group of strangers and say, hey, can I play this game with you? But when you're somebody who's got some feelings already that other people might be too quick to judge you and to have negative feelings about you, that's even harder. So I guess the message that I'm sensing that might be good for our listeners and for the community generally to take on board from that is, regardless of who it is who walks up to you, if they're LGBTQ+, or if they're a woman, or if they're a, as far as you can tell, a cisgendered man, be nice to them and do the best you can to make them feel
definitely.
Welcome.
Just be pleasant to everybody. Yeah,
definitely.
Even now, is there anything that you feel about sort of tournaments generally and the way they're run that you like or you don't like? Or is there anything about Netrunner as a game, like after you did come out, you've obviously decided to keep playing and keep coming back, so the community must be, I guess, doing something right in that sense, that it's a comfortable and safe space for you?
Yeah, I definitely think the Netrunner community has been super pleasant, and they're always they're just there to play the game. No one's here to make money or anything. They just want to come out and have a good time, so usually everyone's super pleasant, and it's a really awesome community.
And you've obviously got quite involved in the online community as well through your Octagon Play, but also sort of browsing forums and stuff as well.
I don't participate a ton on the StimHack forums, but I definitely play on Octagon quite a lot.
So quite a few episodes ago, we had Dan D'Argenio on, and he spoke briefly about the ANR PC, which is the Android Netrunner Pro Circuit. We don't have a branch of it yet in Australia. We're hoping to maybe have one day. There is one in Britain and parts of Europe, as well as the US, obviously. And V, you actually played in one of the ANR PC tournaments in Palm Bay recently. Could you just give us for those of our listeners who may not know what it is, give us a brief rundown of what the ANR PC is and what it's trying to do?
The ANR Pro Circuit is basically a collection of different tournament circuits in different regions of the U.S. and the world. Basically, kind of supposed to be the top tier of competitive play. You play first in a qualifier tournament, and the top three from that event will go to a bigger event for the entire circuit. There's like a series of qualifiers that feed into one big event where all the people who qualify will play together, and it's a very competitive environment.
And was this the first ANRPC event you'd played in?
Yeah, this has been the first event I've played in so far.
And so what was your kind of goal going into the tournament?
I was kind of hoping to qualify, though. That didn't work out exactly, but I wanted to also kind of, you know, keep my expectations too low, and didn't expect for sure to qualify, I guess.
This was the most competitive tournament you played in since the regionals?
Yes, I haven't actually played in any tournament since the regionals, I believe.
Because you won a bye, didn't you, even though you came second? Because Pacer had one, but you couldn't make it to Nats?
Yeah, unfortunately that's true.
Oh, so you had your chance again in Palm Bay, which is good. How'd the decks perform?
Kind of surprisingly, my Kate deck kind of failed me on the day. It only won a single game. It was just, I think I made a bad meta call. I was expecting more NEH, but a significant part of the tournament was made up of Tampa Bay players, and they all seem to really favor kind of a rush RP deck that the Kate deck really struggled with on the day.
What kind of Replicating Perfection list are they playing if it's more aggressive? Are they playing a different agenda suite?
I think the agenda suite is probably pretty standard, but they love to have an ELP out like at all times. I believe they play three and then just score out between like a single ice and a Caprice Nisei. And then just you're kind of, you may not have the breaker, you might not have the economy to go through it multiple times. In one game, it was just a wall of static and a Caprice, but you know, my lady only had so many goes at it, and I just couldn't win the side game for it.
Yeah, I've seen that deck going around a little bit here in Melbourne, only a little, but it seems to be doing quite well, and prepaid does seem to struggle with it because it's hard to deal with Caprices on remotes because you can't really drain them of resources, so that they don't really need that many. Yeah, as you said, one wall of static and a Caprice can be enough to keep you out if it's the server doesn't even need to be that taxing.
Right, exactly.
And what corp did you bring?
I brought a very similar RP list as I did to my regional event. I kind of tried to tech it towards noise because I was expecting a lot more noise as well. But again, it was more Criminal and other Anarch, I found. So I had Cyberdex Virus Suite and an Architect in my list.
There was a lot of Criminal at the tournament, you say?
Yeah, again, the Tampa players really favor Criminal, but I guess that's kind of what is pretty good against a Rush RP deck, is a deck that can, you know, throw siphons at it.
And how was your record at the end of the tournament? Were you happy with your performance?
Looking back, I guess I was pretty happy because there was only 13 players, but it was probably, you know, the 13 most competitive players in Florida. I ended up splitting completely, so my corp did a lot better and kind of made up for my Kate, but I ended up 4-4 for the whole tournament.
It was a good experience?
Yeah, definitely. It was nice. It was just, you know, 4 Swiss rounds and really high level play. It was a lot of fun.
And you would have got to meet quite a few people that you hadn't seen before, I assume.
Well, it's actually a lot of the same people I had met at the regionals before, but, you know, kind of with maybe the more competitive players at the regional event. So it's nice to see some people again, actually.
So you'd definitely recommend the ANRPC to anybody listening who's a competitive player and wants to get in amongst it?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a great way to play a very competitive tournament that might not, you know, take all day, because it's mostly only going to be the most competitive people at those sorts of tournaments. So, you know, you can get it done a little quicker and there's no elimination brackets.
Right. So is it, you might have said this already, this is just more for my personal interest, how many people get to qualify?
The top three at each event will qualify into
okay.
the big event.
Awesome.
And where's the bigger event being held?
For ours, the Southern Megacity Tournament, it's in Atlanta, Georgia, I believe.
And the winner of the Southern Megacity, what do they win?
I believe they win $500. You know, of course, Pro Circuit kind of started out as, you know, the winner would get money to travel to Worlds, but that didn't really pan out with the way Fantasy Flight has set up Worlds. So now they're just preparing a cash prize, and, you know, hopefully people can use that to travel to Worlds if they have a ticket.
I think a lot of people will, just from seeing the way people react to that sort of thing in the Netrunner community particularly. You know, people already spend quite a bit of their own cash traveling interstate and long distances to play, and I think if people want a bit of support to help them keep doing that by playing Netrunner, I'm pretty sure they would just keep doing that.
Was there anything you wanted to add or talk about?
I'd like to give a shout out to my friend Stephen Ball, who I actually met at the regionals, and we've become pretty good friends since then. And then my friend Johnny Anderson, who is launching a Netrunner community site called emergencyshutdown.net, which will be launching in a few days.
At the time of this recording, so I imagine it'll be out there.
Oh, yeah.
And we can put a link in the show notes. Well, what's the goal with that website?
The idea is to kind of connect all the people in Florida to have like one community website for Netrunner, finding events, finding other players, having articles from people in the Central Florida kind of community for Netrunner, all in one place, I guess.
Cool. So, all right, so listeners can check that out. The website is, again, B?
Emergencyshutdown.net.
Oh, are you going to Worlds, V?
I was not lucky enough to get a ticket to Worlds when it was up for 2 hours or something.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for The Winning Agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, you can check us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at Winning Agenda, or you can like our Facebook page and get involved in the discussion there, which is The Winning Agenda. We'd like to thank once again V Herman for coming on, sharing with her experiences, everything you're doing with Data and Destiny, and also your recent tournament outings as well. So thanks so much for coming on, especially for getting up bright and early and braving the humidity of Florida.
Well, thank you for having me.
No problem. We'll love to have you on again. Hopefully the next tournament you go to, you can really slay it. That'd be great.
Thanks, V.
Yep, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll be back here every Monday as usual. We look forward to hearing from you then, so stay tuned. See you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
The first deck I was really into was a Chaos Theory deck with Personal Workshop and 3-Stem Hack.
Oh, yeah, that was around for a little while. It was kind of like, mm-hmm. like a tier 2.0 deck or something like that.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun for me, though. I just like the idea of a little girl being on drugs and having giant programs.
just as an aside, I didn't know until like a week and a half ago that she's supposed to be like 12 years old.
Oh, really?
I told you that.
Did you? Yeah. It wasn't that long ago, was it?
No.
Yeah, I totally thought she was just like a normally aged... whatever.
Can we keep this flavor discussion to a minimum, please?
Yeah, keep the flavor discussion to a minimum.